great pleasure to welcome you here this evening to the Cape Town launch of African Sexualities, a Reader, edited by Sophia Kamale. I'm going to be very brief. In fact, all I'm going to do is very briefly introduce the person who is going to introduce the people tonight. It's absolutely wonderful to have Jane Dennis back with us this evening. Jane, as I'm sure most of you know, heads up the African Gender Institute at GCT. Forgive me for saying in the context of a bookshop, but more importantly, Jane is the author of Porcupine, which I'm sure many of you know, which is one of the finest collections of short stories in my opinion to come out of South Africa in the last 3 or 4 years. Jane, it's wonderful to have you back here. Thanks for putting together tonight, and enjoy the evening. Take it away.
And to the Book Lounge for hosting this. I think this is one of my favorite places in the whole of Cape Town. There's nothing better than some wine, some chairs, some books, some people whose minds just set you alight just with that first sentence and word. So I'm very, very grateful to Mervyn for opening the space up to us and to you for coming this evening. The event is hosted by the African Gender Institute, and there are a number of us here, but I'm not going to introduce us all to you. And it's also co-hosted by the Women and Gender Studies Department of the University of the Western Cape. So the book about which we're going to hear is a compendium, a kaleidoscope of collaboration and discussion and people working across seemingly impossible borders. And anybody who knows anything about the ways in which Cape Town works around higher education will know that people at Cape Town, the University of Cape Town, tend to think that the University of the Western Cape is at least as far as the South Pole. At least as far. It's far. It's really far. Hard to get there. It's not far at all. It's no more than 15 minutes. And the people who work at the University of the Western Cape have brought to the African Gender Institute an extraordinary spirit of solidarity, challenge, engagement, and I don't know how we would have managed to do any of our work without, over a long time, without knowing that in fact they were not at the South Pole. They were round the corner. So it's a great pleasure to me to be able to co-host the event, and Desiree Lewis, who is currently the head of the department, will be actually talking. No, she's shaking her head.
I'm not. Lindsay Close.
Lindsay Close is the head of the department. When you hear Desiree Lewis, you will think that there ought to be two heads. No, that's how it's
going. She's a heart.
Yes. A heart, as opposed to a heart. I also, of course, want to extend the warmest of welcomes to Professor Sylvia Tamale, who has agreed to come into South African space to launch the book, which was in fact published a little earlier this year by Pambazuka, African Sexualities, a Reader. And I don't know if you know this, but a few years ago, and this is now an apocryphal story, so Sylvia would have heard it many times, but some of you, it might be the first time. A few years ago, Sylvia Tamale was identified as the worst woman in the world.
Not in the world.
In Africa. In Uganda. What she did in 2003 was make the very radical suggestion that an employment and equity commission, or commission on equality, should take seriously the idea that the word minority encompassed sexual difference in relation to lifestyle, desire, identity, sexual orientation. And this seemingly quite reasonable suggestion, a suggestion from a lawyer, actually, put her in the middle of a maelstrom of attack and vitriol. But she has said to me in person and in public, actually, that that particular appellation is one that she bears with enormous pride. And the ways in which I have known Sylvia involve a combination of courage and intellect and humor and in-your-face intellectual and practical activism, which is very, very rare. You know, a lot of people will say to you things like, well, I'm a writer and I'm an activist and I'm an advocate and I'm a friend and I'm a pet lover and I'm a writer and I'm an activist. Okay. Well, Sylvia actually is. She really is. She is a writer. I have benefited deeply from that writing, from that research. She is an activist. I have seen her with all working with people deeply marginalized in Eastern Africa, in Southern Africa, fighting for political strategy, fighting for a voice. She is an advocate. I have been, I have been lying in my bed with my cell phone on SMS as she sits in a public hearing where she is challenging the proponents of the anti-homosexuality Bahati bill. In Kampala, she is SMSing, guess what they have just said? They are so weird. SMSing, you are kidding. Have you tried this? And she said, no, I can't do that. So, I mean, what is that except a relationship to not transforming, but revolutionizing the meaning of a border? And I'm going to turn to Desiree Lewis to tell you a little more about the book itself, and then Sylvia herself will speak about its process, its politics, and of course we'll have another opportunity for questions. So thank you again for coming. And can I turn you over to Desiree?
I'm not going to be long because I think we all want to hear from Sylvia, to speak to Sylvia. But it gives me great pleasure to say something about this book. It's an extraordinary book. When Sylvia first started to talk to me about this book, which was it's been a long process, which has been also a really substantial process. It's a good book to hear. She was very emphatic about the fact that she wanted this book to be an exploratory work, a work that grew out of exploration, working with other people, rather than something that's just put together. I think we've become so used to books that are simply edited collections, edited in quite a mechanical sense. I think especially in the field of African sexuality, it's become flavor of the month, and people are very sort of hastily, rapidly putting books together. They're at the ground of conferences and I think this book really testifies to Sylvia's consistent work with a range of knowledge producers. And I think the word knowledge production, the idea of knowledge about sexuality, about African sexuality, is crucial to this book. The book testifies to what we find in the book are a range of genres. She refuses to focus on the idea of the academic article, the academic essay. There are poems, there are life stories. So she explodes the notion of what knowledge constitutes. For me, what is also very important about this book is the implicit question that the book raises, which is, how do we communicate? How do we reach readers? When I first sent Sylvia my contribution, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to stay there, go out for peer review, the usual kind of academic process. What I didn't expect was for Sylvia to write back to me and say, what do you mean by this phrase? What do you mean by this line? And isn't there a different way in which you can explain what you, just say what you want to say? And I realize how, as academics, we so often speak in terms of formula. We speak in terms of familiar concepts, familiar language. So, you know, I would use a phrase like, reversing the future sexuality, and somebody would say, but why say this? And of course, the bottom line is that one doesn't need to say it that way. And I think what is so powerful about Sylvia's book is that it refuses to simplify the issues. It's not as if she was asking contributors to simplify or water down important issues. But what she was asking people to do, and I think what the book does make clear, is the ability of certain forms of knowledge to really communicate with and engage readers. Jane told me this story early on about the fact that her book felt swiped by people that she works with, and they refused to give it back to her. And I think this really encapsulates what this book does. It's an extremely engaging book. I think I haven't had my copy yet. I haven't seen my copy yet. I look forward to it. So I'll stop there.
Thank you, Jane. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Good to see you. It's such an honor for me to be here this evening. It really is. I haven't had a Kampala launch because I'm afraid that people like Bahati, when they see the images in here, they will ban the book. So I'm giving it some time. I'll do it in January. But we've had some launches in Europe. And next month I'll launch it in the US. But I think this is a very special one. And I'm so happy that all of you, each one of you, made time to come and be witnesses. For me, very important occasion. So now before I get to the what, why, how questions regarding this reader, I need to share something with you. A few years ago, I seriously considered joining elective politics in my country. Yes, the country of the anti-homosexuality bill. I was frustrated with the status quo. I was in search of transformative change. But then after giving it some serious thought, I figured that I was unlikely to make any change with a few lone voices in Parliament. My chances were much better within the walls of the lecture room, where I could shift the consciousness of my law students who were likely to take over power in the next 10 or so years. So that's where I still am, and that is why we have this today. So what is The Reader about? The Reader is an anthology that maps the diversity of African sexualities and sexual cultures. It challenges readers to interrogate the several basic assumptions that they hold about African sexualities. It is the first, if not one of the first, interdisciplinary reader of its kind. But it includes over 60 contributions by African writers and thinkers from a range of ages and professions. I'll introduce the South African contributors later, many of whom are here. The book provides an African perspective incorporating original research and analysis, life stories and artistic expression. It examines dominant and deviant sexualities, analyzes the body as a site of political, cultural, and social contestation, and investigates the intersections between sex, power, masculinities, and femininities. Through feminist approaches, African sexualities analyzes sexuality within the various structures of oppression, that is patriarchal, capitalist, colonial, neocolonial, and so on, while also highlighting its emancipatory potential. Now, why did I decide to produce this edited volume? It was out of sheer frustration, looking for teaching materials for my course. When you teach gender and sexuality on this continent, as many of you know, it's very, very difficult to come across material that is familiar and students that will resonate with students. So I decided to do something. I did it as a political move. We were sick and tired of being defined by others, especially our sexuality, to offer a new window through which to learn and theorize sexualities using the elegant and celebrated African tradition of storytelling, poetry, art, and song. I did it to inspire other African scholars and activists to pursue research and publication in this taboo subject. I did it to open minds, to unveil complexities, give voice, shift consciousness, raise awareness, unleash potential, promote dialogue, affirm and transform lives. I did it to reclaim the dignity of Africans as a people by debunking stereotypes and oversimplifications and by empowering ourselves. I'm not sure if I've achieved this. I was telling Jen about this Canadian radio presenter who was interested in interviewing me about the book. So she went ahead and read the book. I'm talking about debunking stereotypes and oversimplification. And I asked her, can you please send me the questions prior to the interview? Because I always like thinking about my answers beforehand. So she sent them, and she sent 20 very long questions. And the first question was, can you please tell me more about this practice? Or there's an article in here that talks about, she's basically saying that culture is dynamic, it's not static. Even African sexual cultures have moved, have evolved, especially with HIV/AIDS. And she talks about, you know, some of the traditional practices in among the Baganda, where, you know, some they had to have sex during, for example, last funeral rites. They, because of HIV/AIDS, that has changed, and now instead of having sex, they will have some symbolic ritual of the man pissing in a spot on the ground, or jumping over a woman's warm legs. How? Can you still tell me more about this practice of jumping over warm legs and peeing in one spot? That is what she got. And then she said, I can see that the book writes a lot about HIV/AIDS. There isn't one piece that is entitled HIV/AIDS, apart from a poem. It comes as, you know, HIV only comes, you know, as a bearing to other issues. I deliberately avoided having a part, a section on African HIV/AIDS because that is what they expect. But you see, it is very, very difficult. But that was my aim, at least, my idealistic aim.